Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. You know, last week we talked a lot about mental illness, and as I continue my research, I find so many doorways into things like depression and the inability to cope with everything that happens to us on a daily basis. Even when things are going fairly smooth, it seems like some of us have a tougher time coping with just the everyday tasks. And there's some reasons for that. And one of them is lack of sleep. Not getting enough sleep is very, very hazardous to your well-being. Excuse me, not just your mental health either, your physical health. I came across 8 major problems if you don't get enough sleep every night. And the first one is it increases your risk of stroke. Number 2 is it leads to obesity. Number 3 is it increases your diabetes risk. Number 4 is it fuels memory loss. Number 5 is it damages bones. Number 6 is it increases cancer risk. Number 7 is it hurts your heart. Number 8 is it kills you. I thought those were all pretty clear-cut, short, and to the point. They gave all reasons, and ultimately, the big reason is if your body doesn't get enough shutdown time, then everything stops working at full capacity. And, of course, the risk of stroke has to do with anxiety and stress and not being able to deal with it by being overtired. Obesity is because we often eat things to comfort us because we're tired, or we feel like we need to do something to make ourselves feel better because we're exhausted. And, of course, diabetes has a lot to do with diet as well and not giving your body an opportunity to regenerate during the night hours when you're supposed to be resting it. And bone damage, again, leads to bone damage because of the inability to eat properly and get the right amount of exercise. They all are circles, and they all come back to the same thing. So when I researched the biggest sleep disorders, obviously in insomnia, everybody is aware of, and it's the inability to sleep without some kind of assistance, pharmaceutical assistance. Well, probably 20 years ago, after growing up with a friend of mine and sharing an apartment when we were 17 and 18, I had an opportunity to be in a hotel in Jersey with her because I was there for some managerial classes, and she worked for New York State Electric and Gas. And she met me at the hotel, and for the first time in many, many years, we slept in the same room. Well, the very first night, I thought, my gosh, I never heard anybody snore like that in my whole life. But I was exhausted because I had gone on about 3 hours sleep myself, so I fell asleep, and I must have slept pretty hard because that night it didn't bother me. The next 2 nights, I hardly slept at all because there were times when my friend quit breathing at all. She was snoring so hard it would sound like a train was coming through the room, and then all of a sudden there'd be no noise, and I'd find myself wide awake waiting for her to breathe again. So I didn't say anything until the 3rd day. And we were having dinner together, and she was leaving, and I was coming back to Florida. And I said, Patty, you got to go to one of those sleep clinics and find out what's wrong. She says, what are you talking about? She says, oh, I know I snore. Butch won't even sleep in the same room with me. I said, you don't just snore. You quit breathing. And, of course, at that point in time, like I said, this was a good 20 years ago, there was no talk of sleep apnea. There was no, there were no studies being done on it openly. I mean, there could have been in private sectors, but there wasn't anything that was all over the news or anything people knew about on a general level like the insomnia. And indeed, that's what she had, and the doctors told her that I saved her life because one of those times when she quit breathing, she could have really quit breathing. So I want to tell everybody about sleep apnea, but Shelley has joined us, so I want to bring her in. I don't like to leave her out in case she hears me read something that she would like to comment on. So let's bring her in. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Reen.
How are you?
Doing good. It was nice of you to bring me in. Thank you.
Sure. Well, I know sometimes when I'm reading stuff, there might be something you want to talk about, you know?
Well, yeah, and before you get into the sleep apnea, I did want to confirm part of what you just read with regard to what sleep deprivation does as far as causing obesity and some of the other health issues. If you remember when we were working at Hippocrates, over a couple of year period of time, I had gained over 40 pounds. Now, I'm only 5'2", so on me, it really showed. And the reason I gained that weight wasn't so much that I was making poor dietary choices, although when I would work these overnighters, I would run out to 7-Eleven and get a cup of coffee and maybe a donut. But that wasn't really what put the weight on me. What put the weight on me is that one of the things, and I've also done research on it also because I had to figure out how to fix what I was doing to myself. And a couple of the books that I read talked about that when you force yourself to stay awake past exhaustion, which is what I kept doing, your body releases hormones that actually create fat retention so that you could actually eat lower calories and still gain weight. And that's what happened to me. I mean, I ate most of my meals at Hippocrates, which was raw food, and I was still gaining weight at an exponential level. I mean, to gain 40 pounds in a matter of a couple of years was, it was very, very fast for me, and it happened so quickly that it's like every couple of months I was 5 pounds heavier, you know. So, you know, I did experience that. And once I realized it, I have paid more attention to getting rest. But it's happened to me two more times where I've gone through periods, anytime I've gone through stress or where I've started working excessive hours, I put the weight right back on again. So it's like that. That's kind of like a weakness for me now, is that I know that it's going to mess with those particular hormones, and instantly I start gaining weight. So then I start paying more attention to make sure that I get decent rest. But but it causes an increase in cortisol in the body, which there's a lot on the internet about, and it messes with the hypothalamus, which is one of the glands in the brain that has to do with controlling your weight and your metabolism. When you force yourself to stay awake, you actually damage the hypothalamus gland, and you secrete these. They're almost like toxic type of hormones to the body. Almost kind of like your body is putting uppers into you to keep you awake. So it's not a healthy alertness. It's almost like you've taken a drug to get there, and you crash the same way you would crash if you had taken a drug, because it's an artificial means of your body keeping you awake because you're forcing it to, and when you crash hard. And that's what used to happen to me. I would all of a sudden go through my second wind, and I'd have this artificial alertness, like I just drank 10 cups of coffee, but then when I would crash later, I would sleep too hard. So, that's something I experienced, and it really can mess with your metabolism quite dramatically.
Right. Well, having been in the restaurant business and, of course, set up with sick babies and all the things, as many, many, many of us, millions of us can relate to, lack of sleep is also detrimental to your mental health. It causes severe depression. It causes great angst and anger. so many different things. But I want to read through this about the sleep apnea, because there may be people out there who, you know, it's funny, because even at Hippocrates, one of the parts that you had to fill out when you were, wanted to be a guest there, and when you were choosing your room, you were always asked if you snored. And I would say 60% of the people said, no, I don't snore. And 60% of the people didn't sleep with anybody all night. They were single people. And who knew if they snored? I mean, you know, the dog
right.
isn't going to tell you, and the cat isn't going to tell you. So it would be, you know, I would be the one that would have to walk up to them and say, I'm sorry, your roommate can't stay with you. You're going to have to get a private room because you really snore too much. So it would often take them by surprise. But sleep apnea is a common disorder in which you have one or more pauses in breathing or shallow breaths while you sleep. And as I said, my friend Pat, she was very large, she was very heavy, and the biggest part of her weight was in her torso. She didn't have big legs, she didn't have a big butt. All of her weight was carried in her belly and her torso, but in the front. And breathing pauses can last from a few seconds to minutes, and they could occur 30 times or more an hour. Typically, normal breathing then starts again, sometimes with a loud snort or choking sound, and that is exactly what she was doing. Sleep apnea usually is a chronic condition that disrupts your sleep. When your breathing pauses or becomes shallow, you often move out of a deep sleep and into a light sleep. As a result, the quality of your sleep is poor, which makes you tired during the day. Sleep apnea is the leading cause of excessive daytime sleepiness. Now, they have an overview of sleep apnea, which I think everybody needs to listen to. Sleep apnea often goes undiagnosed. Doctors usually can't detect the condition during routine office visits. Also, no blood test can help diagnose the condition. Most people who have sleep apnea don't know they have it because it only occurs during sleep. A family member or a bed partner might be the first to notice signs of sleep apnea. The most common type of sleep apnea is obstructive sleep apnea. In this condition, the airway collapses or becomes blocked during sleep. This causes shallow breathing or breathing pauses. When you try to breathe, any air that squeezes past the blockage can cause a loud snoring sound. Obstructive sleep apnea is more common in people who are overweight, but it can affect anyone. For example, small children who have enlarged tonsil tissues in their throats may have obstructive sleep apnea. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard, I used to take care of a little guy when he was a baby, 6 months old. He snored so much that I started putting him to sleep on a pillow so he would sit up, you know, be raised on his head. And the doctors told his mom, you know, you shouldn't do that with a baby. They might roll over and they might, and he's 6 months old. And I said, wait, tell the doctors this child is perfectly healthy. He's not going to roll over and get clogged up in his pillow. But when he snores so much, he doesn't get a good night's sleep, you know.
Right.
And he grew out of that, but she had to have, his mom had to have him get a tonsillectomy before he was two because his tonsils were so enlarged. Yeah. Central sleep apnea is the less common type of sleep apnea. This disorder occurs if the area of your brain that controls your breathing doesn't send the correct signals to your breathing muscles. As a result, you'll make no effort to breathe for brief periods. Now, that's pretty scary, that one. Central sleep apnea can affect anyone. However, it's more common in people who have certain medical conditions or use certain medicines, probably things that slow you down would be the biggest thing. Something like, and I'm not, this is me talking, this is not the article, but when I read this, I immediately went to people who take something to sleep and a Valium and this and that so that their body is on tremendous slow-mo. and I can see their brain, you know, not getting around to tell them that they have to breathe.
Wow.
So that's something you need to take into consideration, too. And if you sleep by yourself, you know, and you're worried and you wake up in the morning and you still feel unrested and there's lots of headaches, too. One of the articles I read said lots of headaches with sleep apnea because you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain and because you're struggling so much of the night to sleep. Central sleep apnea can occur with an obstructive sleep apnea or alone. Snoring typically doesn't happen with central sleep apnea. Now this goes into this too. It increases high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, obesity, and diabetes. And it also makes arrhythmias, which a lot of people are diagnosed with, or irregular heartbeats more likely. And it also talks about, you know, you increase the chance of having work-related or driving accidents and things like that. So I guess the thing that I wanted to alert everybody to more than anything is be aware of that. And if you get up in the morning, because so many people say that to me, I don't know what's wrong with me, I went to bed at 8 o'clock, I slept until 6, and I still feel exhausted. This could be going on with you.
Right.
And if you're sleeping alone and there's nobody that can say, oh, my God, you kept me up all night snoring, you maybe need to maybe even put in a recording, you know, a recorder in your room or something, something simple like that, and just check on it. Mm-hmm. Because it's really very, very dangerous. And if you let it go, before you know that it's wrong, it could be too late.
Right.
So
right.
I really think it's a serious issue. And one of the things, as I said, that brought me to the sleep apnea was the fact that it has a lot to do with mental illness, which is something that we've talked about a lot in the last couple of weeks on the show. Now I want to touch base on something sad again. And I may have trouble reading this because this is incredibly sad. This was posted this afternoon on my Facebook page, and I also belong to the LGBT Q Nation, and they send me emails a lot. A bullied New Mexico gay teen posts suicide note online before taking his own life. The kids in school are right. I'm a loser, a freak, and a fag, and in no way is that acceptable for people to deal with. In Las Lunas, New Mexico, an openly gay New Mexico high school student who spoke out against bullying died Tuesday after his family removed him from life support following a suicide attempt over the weekend. Carlos Vigil, 17, posted a suicide note online on Saturday where he described being the target of bullying and wrote, "The kids in school are right. I'm a loser, a freak, a fag, and in no way is that acceptable for people to have to deal with." His father rushed home when he heard about it, but it was too late. Family members said Monday that Carlos had been suffering from the effects of bullying since elementary school, and that they had transferred him from one local high school to another due to the constant strain of being targeted. Carlos's mother, Jacqueline Vigil, said her son was involved in youth and government and tried to push for stronger anti-bullying laws, but his own experience with bullying became too much. She said Carlos had been bullied since he was 8 years old and was picked on for everything from his weight and acne to his glasses. In the suicide note that he posted on Twitter, this is what Carlos wrote. "I am sorry to those who I have offended over the years. I'm blind to see that I, as a human being, suck. I'm an individual who is doing an injustice to the world, and it's time for me to leave. Please don't ever feel sorry for me or cry, because I had an opportunity at life, and that opportunity is over. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to love someone or have someone love me. I guess it's best, though, because now I have no pain onto, I leave no pain onto anyone. The kids in school are right. I'm a loser, a freak, and a fag, and in no way is that acceptable for people to deal with. I'm sorry for not being a person that would make someone proud. I'm free now. Hugs and kisses, Carlos.
Wow.
Isn't that, I mean, you know, you read something like that and you try to envision what is going through this young man's head, you know. You try to figure it, because he, obviously his mom and his dad loved him, but there's something about when a mom and dad love you, and some kids don't even get that, you know, sadly, but when they love you, you kind of take that for granted and think they're supposed to love you no matter what kind of a jerk you are. That's what you think.
Right, right.
So it doesn't mean much. I mean, it means a lot to have their support, obviously. But in the big scheme of things, it's not enough for them.
Right.
So the mom says, my son, he didn't deserve this. He is not here because of bullying. It drove him over the edge. On Monday, dozens of classmates showed up at the hospital where Carlos was on life support. Even though now Carlos is gone, we need to focus on what he left trying to say. That bullying is a problem, said Alyssa Cisneros, a former classmate at Valley High School. Posting his Twitter account early Tuesday morning, Carlos's family wrote, Carlos is finally at peace. Thank you, everyone, for your support and prayers. Please don't forget what he wanted to stop, that he wanted to stop the bullying. Carlos died at 1:47 a.m. after being removed from life support and having his organs donated. On Tuesday afternoon, his family reported that Carlos's kidneys had been successfully accepted by a recipient. He now lives through others, they tweeted.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It's, you know, and there's always things written by people, and I very happily received a phone call today from Izzy Kalman, who is finally back in the States. And he'll be back on the show tomorrow night, and we're
going to
talk about that with Izzy, because of course in his line of work, aside from the fact that he believes that the golden rule is the way to go, and Shelley and I believe believe that as well. Sometimes when it gets to this extreme and there's so much pain involved and there's so much to forgive and forget, it's almost impossible. So one young man writes on all the comments, okay, it's time that, number one, the parents of these bullies need to step up to the schools and need to step up and call the parents and then finally beat some ass, stop this stupid stuff of kids' rights. So I am the parent, and in my book, that kid, as long as he or she is under my roof, will follow my rules, period. You know, I can hear myself saying that if I found out one of my kids was being mean to somebody else. That would really, really, really upset me. We go back to the night in the hospital with Michael, and I looked at Mike and Val and said, who would you rather be, us or the parents of those three boys? And we all unanimously said us. So
right,
there's something
right.
Very heartbreaking about knowing you're the parent of somebody like that. Ironically, though, you remember a couple weeks ago I told the story about a young girl. There's a video of a young girl, 14, beating up another girl in the classroom, ramming her head into the lockers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
And sitting on her, straddling her, and just whomping her in the face and everything. She had a concussion. They showed pictures of her in the hospital. Her parents went to the court and told the court and showed the pictures of their daughter in court, and that judge barred this young girl from any public school in that town, not the state, but in the town.
Wow.
And the director of schools vetoed the judge's mandate and said you cannot take a public school away from a 14-year-old student, even
right,
if we have to move her four or five times. You remember that? Well, that was
right.
That story popped up again today, and I remembered it, and ironically, it was just before I read this, and I thought to myself, you see, this is why Izzy's right, because too many personalities get involved, and because people try to see both sides of an issue. I'm guilty of that, always trying to see, you know, what makes somebody do something stupid or something bad. There must be a reason, and trying to understand it. And part of me is proud that I can do that, and part of me thinks that sometimes it doesn't serve me the best. And I think that's what's happening a lot with people. You don't want to believe that a 14-year-old kid, especially a girl, a pretty girl, can be a monster like that.
I know.
So you almost make so many excuses for them so it looks like it was some kind of a mistake. But if you see the video, there was no mistake. She didn't just, lose her temper and swing once. She whooped on this girl like they were mortal enemies. Like
right.
They were in a ring or something.
And when you pummel somebody like that, you can, well, first of all, you can kill them, but you can certainly cause life-altering injuries where you can cripple them. You can blind them, you can deafen them. You know, certain types of head injuries are permanent. You don't recover from them, you know, and they don't understand when you're beating on somebody that hard, you can actually create those type of permanent injuries where now if this person survives, they're going to have some sort of a disability now, you know,
mm-hmm.
because you lost it over what? You know, what made her so mad? Was she just bullying this girl? Did the girl say something snide to her? You know, you're going to change somebody's life because they said something, looked at you a particular way, or you were just in a bad mood and needed somebody to take it out on. You know, it's ludicrous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It's ridiculous that you have to. There is no excuse, is the truth. There's no
right.
excuse to go crazy on another human being. We all get that, and we know.
Was there ever any follow-up on why she snapped?
I've never read anything. There's not been anything. I've read probably four stories about this from Fox and even Huffington Post, and I have not seen anything that gives a reason. Nothing.
That always surprises me about the media, that they're so, you know, they're so quick to put stories out and do the follow-up, but how do you only put half a story out? You know, how do you not find that out? They don't have to get it from that girl or from her parents. You know, they somebody has to know. She did it in front of a bunch of people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
mm-hmm.
what precipitated it. You know, it always shocks me that they don't try to give the full story. They tell the shock effect part of it. But, you know, so, you know, it just surprises me that there's not more thorough coverage, especially with something like that where there were witnesses, and there certainly could have been some input about that.
Well, I think in a lot of cases they don't speak directly to the people involved. They get a lot of their information from bystanders, people who think that they have the whole story, and they take it verbatim.
Mm, right.
Family members or the people that are involved, you know, that's what I always said to everybody. That's why we always said something after, a day at the trial or any of those times. I always tried to speak, and Valerie always tried to speak and let everybody know that this was this and that was that. Otherwise,
right.
made up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And
that's
assumptions
true.
Get made, and people think that they know what you're thinking, and often they do not. And
right.
But a lot of cases in a small town like that, too, you know, it has a lot to do with what all your neighbors are saying. Did you ever live in a small town, Shel?
Well, yeah. I mean, Levittown was fairly small. I mean, it was like, you know, knew all of my neighbors when I grew up. I mean, every single one of them. You know, we had about 20 people up and down our block, and I could walk up to anybody's house and just knock on the door, and they'd invite me in. You know, so.
Well, that's pretty small town atmosphere. And did everybody know everybody else's business?
Pretty much.
Well,
you know,
there's something about
when I was a kid. Yes, as I got older, a couple of families moved out, and then people started becoming a little bit more private and stuff like that. So I noticed an evolution, even of the people that stayed, that were very open at one point. I noticed that by the time I became a teenager, because I lived there until I was 18, so it was for 10 years, and during that 10 years, there was definitely an evolution in my neighborhood where things became less open, and we had a couple of fairly violent crimes in my neighborhood. I remember growing up as, you know, like when I got into my teens, they kind of like surprised everybody. And I noticed that there was a definite shift in the openness. People weren't leaving their doors unlocked anymore. When I was very, very young, nobody locked their doors. And we didn't even lock our doors. It was just, you just didn't.
Yeah, us either. But, you know, there's something, it's endearing and yet it's alarming. Because, like we talk about this on the show so much, about people hearing bits and pieces of something and never getting the rest of the story, like what you're saying about this this attack from this girl, and why somebody in charge of the school district would want to put himself out there and say, oh, no, she's got to be able to go to a school. I see his point of view. Because I understand a 14-year-old to be abolished from every school in that district, that's a pretty big order. But away her freedom and put her in jail or put her in a juvenile detention center, she wouldn't be going to any of those.
I don't understand why that wasn't the remedy with her if she's that violent.
They really don't give you that that much information. Like I said, that it's the video speaks volumes. If you watch the video, you're incensed by what takes place on the video and her relentless attack on this kid. Obviously, they didn't like each other. I mean, you know, that goes without saying, I guess. They really didn't like each other. And I don't know if the other girl didn't fight back just simply because she wasn't strong enough. That could be, I guess. Or because she's not the aggressive fighter that the other girl was. But, you know, obviously there was something really wrong. Of course, then you have to take into consideration, we've talked about this before too, the gang mentality. Once something like that gets rolling, I mean, you know, watch a cowboy movie.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, one guy throws a punch and the next thing you know, everything's flying. It's no different with other people, especially with kids, because they have to keep their inhibitions under control so much of the time they get an opportunity to let go. And go over to Wellington Mall some afternoon and go to the little play arena that they have set up there. I am in awe every time I'm there that more kids don't get hurt.
I know, because they're just running pell-mell. They're not looking where they're going. I'm surprised they don't mow each other down all the time.
Top of their lungs, it's like, oh my God, they finally let me out of jail or something. You know, it's like, and
I see them down,
and I see things happen. And the only time it really gets bad is if a parent jumps up. If the parent doesn't jump up, the kids seem to take care of it on their own.
It's kind of
amusing.
Yep.
So with both things, this is very, very sad. And of course, we've talked quite a bit about our gay population and what they go through to get people to understand that they're normal people and they're trying to live their life and they need to stop some of the judgmentality. I'm almost 65, and when I was a young girl, I had the opportunity at like age 12 to live on Miami Beach for a whole summer. My first cruisers and female impersonators and everything, because that was big in Miami back in the But during the day,
wow.
And they were mostly men, but during the day, they just looked like guys. You know, they didn't,
right.
They didn't come out in any kind of feminine costume during the day. But
mm-hmm.
We've come a very long way since then, absolutely, positively. But one of the other things that has happened here a couple times, and I don't get much of a story on it, otherwise I would have talked about it, and that is the fact that we've got some transgender kids in school now. And however they were born is the way the school sees the restrooms. That just blows me away.
Yeah, that blows me away too. That's ridiculous.
You know, I have to think to myself, what are they thinking? Why would they think that that was the proper way to handle that? And a young man who appeared to be, they didn't have his age, but he looked like he was 16 or 17, was suspended because he went in the wrong restroom, because he went in the one that he's comfortable in and was told that he's not allowed to. And remember, just a couple weeks ago, we read the same story, and that was about a really little girl. That was about a six-year-old who was struggling, and her family was on the news.
Wow.
On TV. And
they actually, they're going through the counseling, or they've actually had the surgery?
No, she, you know, sometimes they're born with both genitalia just not developed. And there is a procedure doctors can do when they are newborn, that if parents make the decision, you know, do you want a boy or a girl? It's kind of that kind of a question, and they make a decision and it's the wrong one, then they change that child's life forever. I want to say that I feel very blessed that that was never something I had to do, and my heart goes out to those that have had to do that, but I do know that that exists, and I do know that that happens a lot more frequently than any of us know about.
But you know what's surprising about that is that people know that birth defects happen. I mean, you have children that are born with all kinds of physical deformities or mental retardation, and so why is it so hard to accept the fact that somebody could be born with a hormonal defect where their body created one set of genitalia, but their hormonal balance, which is where your sexuality is guided from, is the opposite sex. It's just a birth defect. But
mm-hmm.
the bottom line is the person is stuck with that birth defect, and if it's operable to correct it so that their physical appearance now matches their hormonal proclivities, who cares? I mean, I don't understand why people turn it into a moral issue. It's a genetic issue. It's an issue where their body doesn't match their chemical makeup. It's no different than being born with six fingers or with a mongoloid appearance. It's a freaking birth defect. I don't understand why people moralize this like there's something wrong with these people. I've never understood that.
Well, I think what annoys me the most is it's none of your damn business.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, if I haven't asked you for your help or your input or anything. It's none of your damn business. Make sure you are perfect. And when you achieve that, Renee Brewer wants to meet you. Because yet met the perfect person. The ability to pass judgment on other people's plights, other people's choices, other people's decisions about how they're going to do this and how to do that is none of your business.
That's right.
And eventually that has to sink in, you know, because I don't want, you know, I don't like it. When I was a kid and heavy, I was thinking about this the other day because I've talked before about not really remembering any bad comments or any hurtful things that were said to me when I was growing up as I got heavier and heavier. And I do remember one thing, and this came to me the other night. You know, you've got such a pretty face. And that would stop me right in my tracks when I was a kid. What does that mean? That,
right.
You know, too bad about the rest of you? Is that the rest of that sentence? And people who really loved me would say that to me. And I've never forgotten that, although it never, until one night after the show when we talked about that, and I said that I sat in that clinic for being overweight and having eating disorders and everything and listened to all the sad things everybody else said and couldn't think of anything. And I recounted that story one night on the radio, and late that night I sat there thinking to myself, well, what about that? That statement said to me probably a million times. Oh, and
right.
You have such a face. So, again, I don't care whether you think my face is pretty or not. And I don't care whether you think I'm fat or whatever you think. It's none of your business. And if you don't like me, that's your loss. And that's the way we have to teach these kids to start feeling. We want everybody to care about each other. But the true fact is, if you don't like something about me, stay out of my way. It's not your job to tell me what you don't like about me or be critical of anything I do unless I ask for your help. It's none of your damn business. And if you want to get into a match where I tell you what's wrong with you and you tell me what's wrong with me, we'll both have a lot to say.
All right. Well, see, the whole thing is that a lot of it comes down to people who aren't 100% okay with themselves. I mean, we've just talked about this before. If you're completely comfortable with who you are, and I've noticed this almost across the board, people that are very, very comfortable with who they are, they're okay with themselves, are really very much okay with other people. Most people that I meet that are very critical of others, very judgmental, bigoted, they have judgments, this type of person isn't okay, they're not really okay with themselves either. They're not happy people. They're very judgmental. But if you notice, a lot of their judgments, you could almost say about them. And I've heard people say, oh, I don't like this about this person or that. And then you're sitting there listening to them, and they're going, oh, my God, have you just described yourself? And they don't even see it. It's almost like they're projecting their discontent on other people. It's the weirdest anomaly, and I've seen it over and over and over again with people with that type of a personality trait.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, and I think that that's a big part of it. We've talked about that 100 times too, and we've both seen that in action when the person. Well, and like Izzy says to us, we talk about being a bully. And he says to me, would it surprise you to know that if we ask this bully why he was being a bully, he thinks he's the victim?
Mm-hmm,
and, of course,
right.
That was like so much. That meant so much to me because that is so right on. And I know that that's true. And I know that people who find it uplifting to cut down someone else, it's because either they're being continuously cut down by someone, or in their own mind, they're cutting down themselves because they have no self-esteem and they don't think that they're who they need to be. So, you know, misery loves company. So I think I'll bring you down to my level.
Right,
and,
right.
This week, you know, I can lord it over you because I've made you feel worse than I do.
Right, right. It almost it really is a power struggle more than anything else. And so that's why if kids were taught, and this is why I love Izzy's message, okay? Because if we were to start with the really, really young children, you would be able to wipe bullying out in a generation. Because as the young kids were to grow up, there just would be no incidents of bullying. If you were to really teach self-esteem to children, you would eliminate both the bullied and the bullier. You get rid of both. Because it's definitely, someone who has a healthy self-esteem is not going to bully another person. The motivation to do that isn't there with somebody who feels good about themselves and good about their life. And it doesn't mean they don't have problems, but it also means that they're going to have better coping abilities. I mean, having healthy self-esteem lends itself to so many other positive personality traits, where the person is more in control. You know, they have a better outlook on life. They can be more positive. But it all starts with a healthy self-esteem. And I think a lot of kids are taught, competition's a good thing, but not when it degrades your value. And I think a lot of parents and a lot of teachers don't teach children how to deal with competition properly, so that when they're looking at another human being, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to try to achieve what they achieved, but being proud of their own achievements anyway, they're like, oh, if I can't be as good as that person, I must be a loser. And they start damaging their own self-esteem because they have either unrealistic goals or they have goals that are somebody else's and not their own, and that's why they're not achieving it. So the self-esteem issue, if that were taught to children, would stop a lot of this on both sides, because somebody has a good, healthy esteem wouldn't allow themselves to be bullied. They would just handle it differently, and somebody who felt good about themselves wouldn't want to be mean to somebody. So I really think that that's something that needs to really be concentrated on.
Well, I do too, and I think that the more that, again, you know, the more that we talk, the more that people are aware of what is the right way to explain things to people, what's the nice way to be able to get a point across. I think that it's really really important that young people understand. Of course, we talk about my AJ all the time and even my older teenagers. But you know what I'm seeing happen? The older they get, the more cynical they become.
Right.
Even with me constantly talking about the same thing and me constantly, they start out with a live and let live attitude. It doesn't matter to them if somebody's this way or that way. As long as they're nice to them, they're good with them. But then one little thing, a bad encounter with somebody or a bad something happens that isn't happy for them, and their mind changes and their attitude changes. And I always hope that somebody in their life is there soon enough to make them understand that, you know, that's going to happen once in a while, but that doesn't mean you're supposed to judge the entire community by one, you know, the bad apple spoiling the whole bushel and all that kind of stuff. That's
exactly.
Malarkey.
Exactly.
Malarkey.
Right. It is malarkey, you know.
And we all are different. And, yes, we do make mistakes. And, yes, we say things sometimes that we shouldn't say, and for whatever reasons. And it takes a very, very big person to tell somebody, you know what, I shouldn't have said that to you. I apologize. I did something the other night. I didn't realize I did it. I hurt somebody's feelings by saying something in front of someone else that was private. I was mortified at myself, mortified. And I looked around the room and I said, I apologize. It was in the heat of a discussion and I wasn't thinking about who was sitting there. And I said, please, I am so sorry. I would never do that, you know, but I did it.
Right.
I didn't do it with any kind of malicious intent, but I did do it. And, of course, everybody was fine with it and forgave me and all that kind of stuff. But it's just the fact that you can do things like that, you know, and sometimes it isn't done with any kind of malicious intent, but you do do it. You hurt people's feelings sometimes without even knowing that you're doing it. But being
right.
able to look at listen, I am so sorry I said something so foolish or something that betrayed your confidence or whatever the case might be, because then that usually, you know, that usually can set things right. And it's a very small thing to have to do, and I think we all should be capable of doing that.
Exactly, exactly. And it does make a huge difference to people when you're willing to show some humbleness and remorse or something like that. You know, a lot of time people make mistakes and they're like, oh, well, get over it. Well, now you've just compounded it. Not only did you hurt their feelings, but now you're being insensitive. But because a lot of people get embarrassed, and instead of just taking responsibility, you know, life is so much easier if you just take responsibility for things you do, because you nip it in the bud before it gets bigger and grows a life of its own. If you just simply say, oh, I don't know what I was thinking, I apologize, first of all, that shows that you're responsible, it shows that you're mature, and it stops it there. But when you snap at somebody because you're embarrassed instead of taking responsibility, now you've just turned that hurt into a bigger hurt. You've actually showed that you're not a responsible person and that you're not compassionate. And it just causes a whole chain of events that takes something that's very minor and turns it into something very major. And that's another big issue, is that people don't take responsibility when they misstep. And everybody does it. The most near perfect among us misstep
mm-hmm.
all the time. But the
mm-hmm.
difference between the person who is in control of their life and who has people respect them, and the people that wreak havoc on other people, is the difference between taking responsibility and not taking responsibility. And I got to tell everybody, it's so much easier when you take responsibility, because you prevent things from getting bigger than they started out with. You end up nipping things in the bud and keeping them small and inconsequential.
Mhm. Mhm. Take all the sting out of it. Take all the
exactly.
I think I'm going to get a T-shirt made. I just wrote this down. I'm going to get a T-shirt made that says, nip it in the bud before it kicks you in the ass.
I like that. That's good. It's very catchy.
it'll be fun around home.
Yeah, right. That's good. That's very good. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see Izzy's message get some real attention. You know, you have a lot of these groups now, anti-bullying groups, trying to get up in front of the lawmakers and Congress and things like that. I would like to see a movement behind Izzy's message, because it really is the one that, if it's applied on a grand scale, if it's applied to start teaching the children young before they're actually even getting bullying, okay,
mm-hmm.
to teach those skills at a younger age, like the story you told about AJ and his little friend.
Yeah.
If we can get them there, that means that at least we'll have a generation coming up that's going to have this be something from the past, you know, and then we can deal with the other children and still help them and create counseling and things like that. But children need to be taught, and I don't know why this isn't done in school. It's almost like the teachers perpetuate some of the bigotry. And I don't like saying that, but I've known some teachers that were openly had attitudes towards one type of child over another one, and they actually let it show, and that's not professional, you know. But I would like to see more attention in the schools about having workshops for kids and teaching them self-respect and teaching them how to respect others. And like you said, mind your own damn business. Don't get all caught up in what your neighbors are doing and what other people are doing. Live your life. Find out what you like to do. Go after it. Ignore what other people think about it, and ignore what other people are doing. It's none of your damn business. And if we could teach people, you know, especially the teenagers, to start adopting that attitude, then we'd see some lightening of this, you know, lightening of the attitudes and lightening of the judgment. A lot of it's coming from the parents, and they don't even know that they're instilling it in their children, which is a shame.
I know. Well, we've probably beaten that to death, the way we feel about what kind of leaders we have become and how it's embarrassing. Well, look at the Zimmerman Trayvon thing. You know, even today, Barbara Walters interviewed George Zimmerman's parents, and they're in hiding as well.
Oh,
and
boy.
I'm like, oh my good God, what are you going to do to them? And they're an interracial family, and so is George and his wife. And,
so how
and,
are you making this out of race? It's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just because it's a bandwagon, and they've got nothing else to scream and cry about. It's just an opportunity to vent for some reason. We seem to need that. I think everybody should put trampolines and punching bags in their backyard. I really do. And get rid of some of the hostility and the anger that they just pour out on anybody, no matter what, whether they deserve it or don't, just so that they can get rid of it out of themselves. There
That's
was
right.
a... One of the stories I read today when you were talking about the teacher, I can't remember, it doesn't matter anyway where it was, but she had a six-year-old stand up and had the rest of the kids in the class walk by him and hit him because he had bullied somebody else.
Oh,
and
geez.
Made the class hit him. She got fired, thank God. But 6, not 16, not 12, 6. That'd be AJ's age. If he came home and
wow.
told me that his everybody line up and come by and smack him, you know, you'd be raising bail money.
I don't doubt it. I mean, what are they thinking? My God. Yeah, you never heard the rule, 2 wrongs don't make a right?
I don't know. I really
wow.
don't know. So, but it's so let's recap the sleep apnea real quick. We've only got a minute left, and I want to make sure everybody knows that if you aren't getting enough sleep, and that when you wake up in the morning you have one of those real thick headaches that's in the back of your neck, and your throat is real dry, and your mouth is real dry, you're probably snoring. And if nobody sleeps with you and nobody can check to see how bad you're snoring and what is going on with you, then you need to go to a sleep clinic, or you need to get a recorder, put it in the bedroom, and record how you're sleeping so you can find out if you need to go talk to somebody about sleep apnea. We told you all the things that it can cause, and just the fact if you're going to get a better night's sleep. It doesn't need to be anything bad, so don't get, you know, overly concerned or crazy about this, but it is something that you need to pay attention to and find out about. And secondly, our hearts go out to the family of this young man that we talked about tonight, and let's hope that him being here and leaving at such an early time will leave a mark and change some minds and make a difference in what's going on in the world today. Let's hope that it will count for something. It does in my book. I hope it does in everyone's. So, from my heart to yours, everybody, a good night and God bless. Good night, Miss Shelley.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.